From the moment the deposition taking started, Berry realised it was not going to be an easy ride. He was trying to admit all the drinker evidence, the blinkered, blustering letters that Rhoda had sent to justify suppressing the drinker report, the firm's false claims to the Department of Labour. To every single question, every single item of evidence, the USRC lawyers fought back. "We object to the question," said Markley, "on the ground that the purpose is immaterial." "We object," said Stryker, "to the witness stating what he told Mr. Rhoda." They even shut down Drinker himself. "I should like to make a statement for the purpose of the record on my side relative to this," the doctor began calmly. "Before you do that, we object to it," jumped in Markley, before Drinker could proceed. The lawyers deemed the collection of authentic letters a scurrilous statement of rumours, and took a clever line of questioning with the pioneering scientist and his colleagues. To each of the three investigators who had authored the Drinker report, they put the question, "Had you had any experience in investigating radium poisoning?" The answer from all, of course, was none. The implication being, how could the word of such inexperienced experts be taken seriously? Only Catherine Drinker pointed out the obvious. "This is the first time the disease was discovered." Berry was not daunted by all this, however. Submitting the Drinker's report, he said cheekily, "It is offered as the best evidence we have and will be used in the event Mr. Rhoda has mislaid the original." The company lawyers merely responded, "If the original is used, it is, of course, subject to our objections." January was going to prove a tough battle. That was for sure. Before they got there, however, an unexpected event took everyone by surprise. Berry had been concerned about the young woman who'd visited him earlier in the year, for Ella Eckert, he had heard, had been near death in the orthopaedic hospital for weeks now. She had the usual symptoms of radium poisoning, the anemia, the white shadow through her bones. Yet despite these telltale signs, Dr. Martland commented, "This case is very puzzling and not as clear-cut as the others." On 13th of December 1927, Ella Eckert died. Martland traced her name on the list of the doomed. D is for death. She'd had an operation earlier that day on her swollen shoulder, and herein lay the cause of her mystery. For when the doctors cut her open, they found a calcareous formation was attached and had permeated the entire shoulder region. It was a growth of considerable size. Such a growth was new to Martland, to all the doctors. No dial painter, so far as they knew, had ever presented such a thing. Radium was a clever poison. It masked its way inside its victim's bones. It foxed the most experienced physicians. And like the expert serial killer it was, it had now evolved its modus operandi. Ella had developed what was called a sarcoma, a cancerous tumour of the bone. She was the first known dial painter to die from such a thing, but she would not be the last. Her death shocked the five girls suing. Her decline had been so fast, yet it also gave them even more inspiration for the fight that lay ahead. On 12th of January 1928, the trial of the decade would begin.